Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 17, 2025. On the top of the front page, party planners, Centennial's high school class of 1975, will gather for its 50th reunion August 1st and 2nd, a weekend that includes a tour of the renovated school and dinner in downtown Champaign. A 50th reunion can be a powerful experience, prompting reflection on the past and inspiring a renewed appreciation for the present and future. Reunion committee member John Rector said, "We have lost 42 members from our class of 355. We aren't promised tomorrow, so let's celebrate with our friends from 50 years ago." Then there's another photo on the front page with the headline, "Meeting Needs," and the caption, "Former Champaign County Board members Jennifer Putman and Leah Taylor examined the county boardroom on the first floor of the new Bennett Administrative Center, 102 East Main Street, Urbana, during an open house Wednesday, just before the building's dedication ceremony. The building, named in honor of the late State Senator Scott Bennett, will house numerous county offices, such as the sheriff, treasurer, county clerk, and recorder. Critical deal reached with anti-violence organization. Cost of 12-month contract is not to exceed $450,000. On the same night that a 14-year-old boy was injured in another shooting in the city, council members voted to work with a special Chicago-based group in the hopes of interrupting and preventing violence. Police reported Wednesday that the boy was still hospitalized and in stable condition following Tuesday's shooting in the 1100 block of North 3rd Street. Two male teens from Champaign, 115, 116, were arrested in connection with the incident Wednesday, and two firearms were recovered. The preliminary police investigation indicates that the victim was in the outdoor common area of an apartment complex when multiple individuals approached him and opened fire, then fled. A couple of hours later, council members approved an agreement with Aclevis Incorporated for street outreach, interruption, and intervention services. Part of the violence reduction blueprint, the loss of life of young folks in our community is not something we can continue to sustain, said Councilman Michael Fulmer. I think this is critical to preventing that. The action came a week and a half after the death of a second 16-year-old shot in a June 29th incident in North Champaign. June's 14 shooting incidents were the second most for any single month in Champaign since last April 2022, according to the police data. The city's contract with Aclevis, which has a not-to-exceed amount of approximately $450,000, is for a 12-month period that started Wednesday, according to community relations specialist Betsy Barclay. Aclevis is a grassroots organization that was founded in 2012 and has been operating since 2018, she wrote in a report prepared for this week's meeting. Aclevis' mission is to support community health and well-being for Chicago area populations at risk for violence and other negative health outcomes, Barclay said. Aclevis uses trauma-informed care, public health principles, and evidence-based strategies across social networks to serve the most vulnerable populations in Chicago and throughout the state of Illinois. She added that CEO LaVon Stone Jr. has been personally affected by gun violence, and the same is true of many staff members at Aclevis. Additionally, over 75% of the organization's staff are justice impacted, and 98% are people of color with the direct experience in street violence, enabling immediate credibility and trust within communities. The strategy Aclevis Incorporated uses for entering unfamiliar communities is rooted in rapid assessment and local hiring and trust building, Barclay said. The plan is to recruit from within the community, conduct organizational scans, and embed trained outreach workers who reflect the area's demographics. This approach has been used to successfully launch services statewide. ACLVIS will serve as a link with individuals who are at risk of getting involved in community violence, in the hopes of interrupting such incidents in real time. Other duties include, but are not limited to, mediating and resolving conflicts between street block groups and responding to critical incidents such as shootings and homicides to de-escalate tension and rumor control. Barclay wrote that ACLVIS will hire at least 5 violence prevention personnel and 3 administrative staff members. The organization will also identify a location to serve as its Champaign headquarters and call center. As applicable, ACLVIS will staff the call center 24 hours per day, 7 days per week, she said. Tracy Parsons, Community Relations Manager for the city's Equity and Engagement Department, told council members that the firm will be hiring locally. Officials commissioned study of police resources. For the first time since 2019, the Champaign Police Department is set for an in-depth look at how it balances resources from staffing to technology. The resource allocation study conducted by 21CP Solutions is a preliminary step in the development of a new departmental-wide strategic plan. The current strategic plan was put in place in 2015. If we weren't in the state we have been in from about 2020 until now, realistically, another strategic plan should have been developed, said Deputy Chief Kevin Olmstead. With where we were at with staffing and all our other priorities, we just didn't have the bandwidth to do that. Olmstead cited staffing shortages as one of the reasons the study would be helpful in a proposal to Champaign's City Council. Coupled with high turnover rates and onboarding a predominantly young, less experienced workforce, the proposal for the $49,604 study was unanimously approved by the council at its meeting Tuesday. Staffing issues, which Olmstead said police departments nationwide are facing, represent only one area where the study's findings could help the department better understand its current challenges. Many others are related to changes in policing since 2015. Technology continues to progress with the addition of tech like drones. Champaign has experienced population and geographic growth, resulting in increased calls for service, and community expectations have shifted. Olmstead wrote that the public has an increased desire for proactive, relationship-driven policing, which is challenging when officers are busy responding to one call after another. Our staffing did increase a little bit since 2019, but I think we're probably still understaffed compared to where we should be, especially for the types of programs that we would like to employ with community engagement and general investigation of crimes, Olmstead said. You know, there is more scrutiny on the overall criminal investigation process now, just because of the advances in technology and social media. That's another trend, he said, police are seeing nationwide, especially in the courtroom. When a case is brought to trial, juries have expectations based on television or social media that may be partly or completely based in fiction, Olmstead said. The prosecutor in the presentation of the case should hopefully provide the background and let the jury know what realistic expectations are. But you always still have the defense that is trying to persuade them, Olmstead said, so we just want to offer the community the best services that we possibly can. And this resource allocation study, I think, is one of the first steps in moving in that direction. Funding for this study will be pulled from an Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, which the city accepted earlier this year. 21CP, the company performing the study, plans to analyze data including calls for service, response times, caseloads, overtime usage, budgets, and more. It will also survey staff, asking questions like whether detectives feel their caseload is too high, whether patrol officers feel pressured to clear calls quickly, and whether support staff are being utilized in the most helpful way. Similarly, 21CP will look at community feedback through focus groups, historical survey data, and media coverage content reviews. Olmstead said he doesn't want to bias the study in any way, but suspects it will determine the department needs more staff and increase its use of technology and other resources. I think it'll also show that we need to continue to strengthen our commitment to community-oriented policing and enhancing our officer wellness and readiness, Olmsted said. That will obviously help us deliver more responsive service to our residents that they expect and deserve. A servant's heart. Coach of the Year DeVille loves seeing smiles on kids' faces. Sarah DeVille wasn't much of a baseball fan before her kids took up the sport. That was some 15 years ago. DeVille was happy to coach them along the way, a decision that led to her being recognized Tuesday as Tom Jones Challenger League's 2025 Coach of the Year at Eichelberger Field. I've went from parent to coaching, DeVille said. I enjoyed it being a parent and just know why the kids love it, seeing the smile on their faces. DeVille and fellow volunteers Kennedy Record and Craig Pressman were honored at the league's annual All-Star Game, which included nearly 100 volunteers from several University of Illinois sports teams at the home of Illini football, softball. They helped batters run the bases and fielders chase baseballs before an energetic crowd of parents and fans. DeVille embraces the team and is there during the entire season and off-season supporting her players. Challenger League co-chair Rick Scholl said it quickly became about more than just her own. It quickly became more than just about her own children for DeVille, with kids Karen, Emily, and Jacob playing the sport at one point or another. I've had my team probably for 5 years since I've been coaching, DeVille said. Just getting to know as siblings joined on too, and just getting to know those families. DeVille, who works in the professional education group at Human Kinetics, was surprised with the honor, as were Record and Pressman. She doesn't seek attention for helping kids with special needs have fun on the diamond, and she's been happy to go along for the ride with Challenger League's army of volunteers. Just the heart and wanting to see the kids get the experience that they would not normally always get, DeVille said. Challenger League's other volunteers, roughly 30 people, support the league throughout the full season. Feel the same about DeVille. She's fantastic, Record said. Definitely has a servant's heart and is willing to give and do whatever we need. We are planning a tournament in the near future, and she was one that was willing to step up when nobody else was. She just naturally has those leadership abilities and goes to jump in when needed. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Centennial Class of 75ers Denise Weatherford Durso and Rebecca Cochran Katsinas. When Centennial High's Class of 1975 reunites August 1st to 2nd, the out-of-town Chargers might not recognize the renovated school. The physical building has transformed, John Rector and the organizing committee said. No more steep stairs at the front of the building. These Chargers remain a tight bunch. The 50th reunion marks the 9th formal celebration of classmates, whose only form of communication was telephone and notes folded like football triangles. The weekend includes a Friday night happy hour at the Esquire, also 50 years old, and Saturday night dinner at City View, reservations required. Call Rector 217-369-5641 or email 1957chsreunion@gmail.com for information. Champaign Central's Class of 75's reunion is the same weekend. Will the Chargers play nice? Should the rivals bump into each other? Yes, as it turns out, many of those students went to grade school or junior high with Centennial High alumni, the Chargers said, not to mention that Champaign-Urbana was a small enough community that post-high school there may have been some emporiums that brought us together. Chances are the Sting, Bradley's, etc., and some possible romances ensued. Teacher of the Week, Ileana Lopez, Math, Jefferson Middle School, Champaign. When Ileana Lopez became a student teacher at Jefferson Middle School in 2016, she found her home for the next decade plus. Since then, the math teacher has only added to her roles there, including starting a dance team 9 years ago. This year will also be her fourth coaching the Champaign Central dance team. I find my work important because middle school is such a crucial time for students. Outside of learning the content in their classes, they're forming lifelong habits, discovering their hobbies and interests, learning how to be good friends and leaders in their community, and building confidence in who they are. It's a big time for growth and change, and I love being a small part of that. I became a teacher because I've had great teachers along my way. My parents being my first teachers, then in school, and dance teachers growing up. Celebrities weren't my role models, my teachers were. It's just something I've always felt came naturally to me. My favorite and most unique lesson that I teach is, not necessarily a lesson, but setting math map testing goals with students and watching them achieve and exceed their own goals. They are always so proud to tell me, and it's exciting for them to be excited about their own growth. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when students can't wait to share a celebration with me. Whether it be something from my class, another class, extracurriculars, or anything else outside of school, I'm thankful they feel like they can share with me and we celebrate together. I keep students engaged by keeping it real and setting high expectations. I do not have a teacher persona as I am me through and through, and hopefully my students can see that I'm genuinely me. Something else I'm passionate about is coaching dance. I started and coached the Jefferson dance team for 9 years and am now going into my fourth year coaching the Champaign Central dance team. Dance is what fueled me growing up, helping me build confidence and learn to be resilient. So it's fun to continue that passion, but in a different role. Truly fuels my fire. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was biology, but my favorite teacher is harder to pick because I've had so many great ones. Mrs. Funk and Mrs. Moeller from Fox Meadow Elementary School, Mr. Jowden Math from Kenyon Woods Middle School, Miss Lee's Biology, Mr. Allen AP U.S. History, and Miss Kubiak Fashion from South Elgin High School. And, of course, my dance educator, Donica Seminario. They really impacted me as student and now educator. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a Disney Parks Imagineer. I'm full of ideas if they're looking. I'm spending my summer traveling through Asia. I'm spending 47 days through Japan, China, Hong Kong, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. This trip helped me cross off a bucket list item, officially visiting all 7 wonders of the world. See you all when I get home. Passman honored for decade of photographing the games. Craig Passman was taking photos at home plate when Tom Jones Challenger League Commissioner Tom Gray began to walk toward him. Passman, who has photographed Tom Jones Challenger League games for about a decade, had no idea he was set to receive a plaque in recognition of his contributions. Totally unexpected, Passman said. I think I've been working with them about 10 years now, and photographing when the coaches come out and work with them as well as the athletes is a lot of fun. Passman was in the middle of the action at the league's All-Star game, venturing around the infield to take photos of kids rounding bases, hitting baseballs, and chasing fly balls. I've always been involved in volunteer activities that involve kids in some way or another, Passman said. Bill Hand asked me a few years ago if I'd help out with this, and it's become a tradition every summer. Record said to have made a big impact in a short period. Kennedy Record is a relatively newcomer to Tom Jones Challenger League, at least compared to the rest of its board of directors. But the 2019 St. Thomas More graduate and coach of 3 seasons has made a quick impact with the organization, which honored her along with Craig Pressman at its All-Star game. I'm still kind of in shock, Record said. I was not expecting it even a little bit. Very honored, very privileged, but I definitely don't do it for the recognition. Record, who teaches special education at Muhammad Seymour Junior High School, was eager to involve herself with the league when the chance presented itself. There's always been a very soft spot in my heart for students and athletes with disabilities, Record said. I think when the door opened for me to come out and volunteer for a game, it was an easy yes. And there's a photograph in the paper with the headline, None Shall Pass. And the caption is, Walter Wilson and dog Susabella Brave brave Wednesday evening's downpour to investigate a limb that fell across University Avenue, just east of Draper Avenue in Champaign, effectively blocking through traffic. Wilson said the wood might be good for one of his projects if he was allowed to have it, but he and the pup decided it wasn't worth waiting around to find out in the rain. Homeland Security, TSA re-examining liquid limits for carry-on luggage. Current rules have been in place since 06. Travelers giddy about being able to keep their shoes on while walking through Transportation and Security Administration checkpoints at the airport again may have something else to look forward to, changes to how much liquid they can carry. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said Wednesday during a conference hosted by The Hill that she is questioning everything TSA does and spoke of possible changes to the amount of liquids travelers can tote in their carry-on luggage. The liquids I'm questioning, so that may be the next big announcement, is what size your liquids need to be, Noem said. We have put in place in TSA a multi-layered screening process that allows us to change some of how we do security and screening so it's still as safe. She gave no details about precisely what those changes might be or how quickly travelers could expect to see them. Under the TSA's current guideline, travelers can carry liquids in travel-size containers, 3.4 ounces or less per item in their carry-on bag. Those containers must be placed in a 1-quart resealable plastic bag. Bigger containers must go in checked baggage, though there are exceptions for medications and baby formula. Noem announced on July 8th that travelers were no longer required to take their shoes off while going through screening after a pilot program showed TSA and the equipment needed to keep airports and aircraft safe while allowing people to keep their shoes on. The policy had been in place since 2006, several years after shoe bomber Richard Reid's failed attempt to take down a flight from Paris to Miami in late 2001. The limits on liquids were triggered by a 2006 incident where authorities foiled a plot to use liquid explosives smuggled aboard carry-on luggage to blow up planes. Ever since the guidelines were put in place, TSA checkpoints have been the scene of travelers quickly guzzling water, digging through luggage to find and discard a too large tube of hair gel, and chucking jars of everything from jam to bottles of coffee that didn't meet the size requirement. The guidance also triggered discussions, sometimes arguments, over what constitutes a liquid. Yogurt, peanut butter, jam and jelly, all are currently restricted in containers no bigger than 3.4 ounces, as detailed on an extensive list that TSA maintains on its website, titled What Can I Bring? Noem also laid out her vision for the future of airport travel during the talk Wednesday. Hopefully the future of an airport where I'm looking to go is that you walk in the door with your carry-on suitcase, you walk through a scanner, and go right to your plane, Noem said. It takes you 1 minute. Observatories capture a glimpse of planet's birth around baby sun. Astronomers have discovered the earliest seeds of rocky planets forming in the gas around a baby sun-like star, providing a peek into the dawn of our own solar system. It's an unprecedented snapshot, a time zero, scientists reported Wednesday when new worlds begin to gel. We've captured a direct glimpse of the hot region where rocky planets like Earth are born around young protostars, said Leiden Observatory's Melissa McClure from the Netherlands, who led the international research team. For the first time, we can conclusively say that the first steps of planet formation are happening right now. The observations offer a unique glimpse into the inner workings of the emerging planetary systems, said the University of Chicago's Fred Ciesla, who was not involved in the study, appearing in the journal Nature. This is one of the things we've been waiting for. Astronomers have been thinking about how planetary systems form for a long period of time, Ciesla said. There's a rich opportunity here. NASA's Webb Space Telescope and the European Southern Observatory in Chile teamed up to unveil those early nuggets of planetary formation around the young star known as HOPS 315. It's a yellow dwarf in the making like the Sun, yet much younger at 100,000 to 200,000 years old, and some 1,370 light-years away. A single light star light-year is 6 trillion miles. In a cosmic first, McClure and her team stared deep into the gas disk around the baby star and detected solid specks condensing, signs of early planet formation. A gap in the outer part of the disk allowed them to gaze inside, thanks to the way the star tilts toward Earth. They detected silicon monoxide gas as well as crystalline silicate minerals, the ingredients for what's believed to be the first solid material to form in our solar system more than 4.5 billion years ago. The action is unfolding in a location comparable to the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, containing the leftover building blocks of our solar system's planets. Key allies' withdrawal puts Netanyahu in minority. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suffered a major political blow Wednesday as a key governing partner announced it was quitting his coalition government, leaving him with a minority in parliament. Shas, an ultra-Orthodox party that has long served as kingmaker in Israeli politics, announced that it would bolt the government over disagreements surrounding a proposed law that would enshrine broad military draft exemptions for its constituents, the second ultra-Orthodox governing party to do so this week. In this current situation, it's impossible to sit in the government and to be a partner in it, Shas Cabinet Minister Michael Malkali said in announcing the party's decision. But Shas said it would not undermine Netanyahu's coalition from the outside and vote with it on some legislation, granting Netanyahu a temporary lifeline. Lawman charged in visa fraud scheme. Federal authorities have charged three small-town Louisiana police chiefs with taking hundreds of $5,000 bribes over nearly a decade in exchange for filing false police reports that would allow non-citizens to apply for visas and that let certain crime victims stay in the U.S. The false police reports would indicate that the immigrant was a victim of a crime that would qualify them to apply for a so-called U visa, U.S. Attorney Alexander C. Van Hook said Wednesday. He said the police officials were paid $5,000 for each name they provided falsified reports for, and that there were hundreds of names over the years. There had been an unusual concentration of armed robberies of people who were not from Louisiana, Van Hook said. In fact, the armed robberies never took place, he said. Earlier this month, a federal grand jury in Shreveport returned a 62-count indictment charging five defendants with crimes including conspiracy to commit visa fraud, bribery, mail fraud, and money laundering, Van Hook said. Those charged are Oakdale Police Chief Chad Doyle, Forest Hill Police Chief Glenn Dixon, former Glenmore Police Chief Thibault Onache, Michael Freck Slaney, a marshal in Oakdale, and Chandrakant Lala Patel, an Oakdale businessman. We have Jim Dye's opinion column, indignant U of I prof status unclear in aftermath of tenure denial. A University of Illinois architecture professor who finds himself in limbo has charged that he's victim of anti-Israel bias that resulted in his being denied tenure. I can think of no other explanation, said Assistant Professor Benjamin Bros, a seven-year member of the U of I architecture faculty. The News Gazette sought clarification on Bross's employment status as well as his charge of anti-Semitism, but a U of I spokesman said, "We won't have a comment." Bross, who is Jewish, said he was initially denied tenure by a review committee that he suspects was motivated by his publicly expressed support for Israel in the aftermath of the October 7, 2023 surprise attack by Hamas. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, July 17th, 2025. Please stay tuned for Part 2.